You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Embracing Change podcast, where we explore how changes in technology and consumer behavior are affecting businesses across industries. This week's episode is brought to you by WSI, your one-stop shop for all things digital. I am your host, Gerardo Carrick, and today we're talking about the impact that artificial intelligence is having on our email communication. My guest today is William Balance, CEO of Lavender, the artificial intelligence tool that helps users write emails that get replies. In our conversation, we touched upon many topics, from the startup journey to communication psychology to how sales teams and SDRs can be assisted by AI tools to improve their results. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change. Our guest today is William Balance. He is CEO of Lavender, which is a very neat tool that helps people write more intelligent emails that actually get read. I invited Will to talk to us about all of this technology that is helping SDRs and salespeople be way more effective in this new world where it's a little bit less to face and we have to rely more on written communication. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Do you want to do a quick introduction on yourself? I did a very brief intro on yourself, but why don't you tell our audience a little bit about you?
Absolutely. So again, I'm William Balance. I'm co-founder and CEO of Lavender. Lavender is an email assistant that helps people write better emails faster, especially for revenue-facing teams like SDRs and AEs on sales teams. My background's a combination. I was an SDR, I was in sales. I also have been designing product for a while and really interested in entrepreneurship. So eventually all of these paths kind of coalesced and now we're building software to help people just communicate more effectively, especially in business settings.
Excellent, thank you so much. And actually, I'm interested, you talked about the entrepreneurship aspect of your world, because I actually met your partner, Will, it's also his name, at your first venture, which I think it was called Sorter, maybe.
Yes,
and
right.
I did meet Will at the Atlanta Tech Village. There was an event happening a few years back. And that's how you and I got connected, because then I know you guys, after some of this evolution, ended up with a new product, which is Lavender. So why don't you, I'm very interested, if we could just spend some time. I know we're going to talk about messaging, artificial intelligence, but I'm interested in just touching the surface on the startup journey. I know you've been at it for a while. Tell me about it.
Our journey has been, I think, really windy. And it's one of those things, I think it's a Steve Jobs quote where he said, you can't connect the dots looking forward, only backwards, which makes sense. It's how history works. But that's how ours has been. Lavender's kind of been this, it's been a product that was built upon a couple different initiatives and things that happened in my life. I met my co-founder, also named Will, at a startup event at the Atlanta Tech Village. It was a weekend competition where I pitched this concept for a marketing technology product that would apply communication psychology and personality science to optimize different types of marketing messages in email and social campaigns. Mm-hmm. But I got to that idea because I had been working on a product that I was trying to sell into colleges on my own. I was a solo founder building this platform to help colleges communicate better with their alumni. And I just saw how the buyers in these schools were making their decisions, and based on their personality, they're making them in much different ways. And I came to that conclusion because before that I was working in a sales job, and a women's college in Virginia had announced that they were closing. And I did some campaigns to help raise money for the school. And one of the ladies who donated was a consultant in communication psychology and taught me all about it. So like all these different life experiences kind of snowballed together. And I met Will at this event. So I was building this alumni communication app, solo founder, bootstrapped, was trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with all the schools in the US at scale. So I had this idea for Sorter, which you mentioned, which would take personality science and help communicate in marketing messages. I went and pitched that idea at this startup competition because one of the rules there was that you could not pitch an idea you've already been working on. So I could not pitch the alumni communication software that I was working on. So I pitched the idea for Sorter. Will happened to have been there. Will was a consultant at the time, and he sat in front of me and we met. He joined my team. We ended up winning this competition. He quit his job literally the next day. I wasn't getting much traction on my alumni app. So I turned that off, and we raised some angel capital shortly thereafter. And we started building this communication psychology marketing product. And that had the whole journey happen along with that, met our CTO and third co-founder along the way, built our first version, did our first test. Then we rebuilt it to start going to market. Finished up some case studies, had a really good pipeline, including the Fortune 500. And we're all set to launch this new version of Sorter in March of 2020. And then COVID happened and we lost the customers that we had, the very early adopting customers. We lost our pipeline. People were freezing their marketing budgets. They weren't bringing on new software. And we didn't really have a home for this product that we were about to launch. Nor do we have a ton of money. So we thought, well, what could be happening in the world that stuff that we've already built could apply to? And we thought people are moving to remote first. And our hypothesis was they're going to be sending more emails. And we had just built technology to analyze the writing of marketing messages. So we thought, what if we took some of that technology and some other technology we had built for the marketing use case, tweaked it a little bit, repackage it, put it more to be for one-to-one communication in the inbox instead of one-to-many marketing messages. And that's how Lavender was born. Originally, Lavender didn't really have a specific purpose. Now it's really used by salespeople. But in the beginning, we just thought it could help people in remote first communicate better in a whole host of use cases, from finding jobs, which people use it for, to finding, to just helping with HR or internal communications. And then it was adopted by salespeople by like the quickest. And we started building more and more for that use case, but it was a pretty windy road, but all things kind of led to the next.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that you don't know why things happen and, but there's always a reason for what's happening, and it's taking us to a different path. Right. And where were we supposed to be? That's what I believe always. Right. And I love your story because it makes me reflect on, I don't know if you know much about the Honda case, right? You know, Honda now is a huge company, huge car company player in the United States. But when they started, this is, you know, I remember starting this in my MBA 20 years ago, right? So maybe you've read the case or not, but there was this big discussion about did Honda success in the US happen by strategy, by planning, or did it emerge? Right. And a lot of people thought, okay, there was like this big plan to come into the United States and dominate. Right. When in reality, when you read the interviews that they made to the team that opened up operations in the US, it just happened like what you're talking about, this windy road between becoming Sorter and then becoming Lavender. They did not have a distribution platform. They did not know how they were going to sell. They didn't know what was the right price point, how they were going to position the product. They were just sent to the US. They rented a flat and they started scratching their heads. And they started knocking on doors. And they innovated in the way they distributed and in the way they price with dealers. But they did it not out of strategy, out of necessity. And what happened is that became such a huge success that then they became a dominant player in the United States. But it was all not planned. It's a strategy that emerged, right? Yeah. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, of course, there's, sometimes we can strategize a lot, but a lot of what we do in life, it's emerging, right? It's happening. We're building it as we're building the plane while we're flying it.
I love that. And I think it's really paralleled to how we came about. All the things that are in Lavender couldn't have been built had the other things not happened. Us getting introduced to psychology and communication psychology and how that applies into revenue communication, trying to build that for a marketing use case, realizing that people needed to communicate in one-to-one. And a lot of the things that would work in other forms of communication would work in this one-to-one form of communication, sales being an optimal use case because of the fact that we had just angel funding. It was COVID. People weren't investing. We were always at death's door, kind of. Mm-hmm. It was built into really our company's DNA that we had to innovate very quickly. We had to ship product very quickly. We had to figure out how to do things that on the outside looking in, we're way bigger than we really are, and just make a lot of noise to bring ourselves to market with very little budget and get our product up to speed to service some of the largest companies in the world now, just as quickly as possible. So it's been in our core DNA, just like this necessity of having to figure things out. And we try to strategize as much as possible along the way. Yeah. But the reality is, up until recently, we didn't have enough breathing room to really do that. It was all about how fast can we go to really just survive and make a name for ourselves. So the Honda story, I think, is obviously we're not Honda, but it's a really great, I think, parallel to many parts of our story.
Yeah, I'll check my files. If I find it, that case study, I'll scan it and send it to you. It's going to be a very interesting reading for you, and it's going to be refreshing to see that you're not the first one that finds this. Now, you touched upon communication psychology. Tell us a little bit more about that, because the reason I want to understand what you mean by communication psychology, and I'd like our audience to hear about that, is because that's at the center of what your product does, right? And what your offer does. So tell us a little bit more about what communication psychology is and why is that important.
So the way we look at it, we're really combining a few different disciplines and ways of looking at psychology. And in Lavender, a lot of the things that we are bringing into the product that are from that, the user doesn't really need to know about. The mistake we made building Sorter for marketers was that we kind of led first with this science first approach to marketing, and marketers don't really care. They just care about what's the outcome going to be. And in fact, it made the product seem more complicated than it was, because we were talking about psychology and neuroscience and all of these things.
People were asking for the time, and you were explaining how the watch works.
Yeah, we were working with like PhDs. We thought we had some of the leading researchers in the world in our field working with us and advising us. And but at the end of the day, the average consumer didn't really care about that. Mm-hmm. And even though we could prove it worked, it just seemed too complicated to them. So with Lavender, we rethought that. Like, how do we tie in all the same types of sciences into Lavender? But the user never needs to know about that. It just works under the hood, and they can get the power of applying the psychology principles, but never have to really learn it. Mm-hmm. But if we peel back the hood a little bit, the things that we're looking at, one, we're looking at how people make decisions. This was really a big part of Sorter, and will soon be a bigger part of Lavender in our next release. And this comes back to when I was doing the fundraiser for the Women's College in Virginia. The lady who donated to my campaign I was helping the school with, she was a consultant in something known as the Herman Brain Dominance Instrument, which is used a lot by companies and even the government to help structure leadership teams. It basically looks at how people make decisions, and I'm simplifying it a ton for this, but essentially says you think through decisions in four quadrants: action or process, vision, like big picture, people, who's affected, who's involved in the decision, and then data, the supporting facts. Mm-hmm. And everyone thinks through these four quadrants of decision-making, but they go into them in different orders and magnitudes based on who they are. So someone who might be really data-driven might be really always in the weeds, never thinking of the big picture. And the inverse is true for people who are very big picture. They might never stop to go into the details. So that was something I learned because of this school fundraiser I got exposed to.
Is this something, just out of curiosity, is this something similar to the DISC profiles that are used in sales to understand, you know, to try to understand and mimic and be able to communicate in a way that your prospect might be more welcoming? Is that similar but for written messages?
So the Herman Brain Dominance Instrument is kind of ubiquitous in how you make decisions. So it can be in lots of applications. Normally it's used in like in HR and trainings and leadership teams to make sure everyone on the leadership team is thinking through a decision in their dominant quadrant. So for example, if the CEO is a very big picture thinker, they might want to pair them up with someone who's very data driven. That way they can look at those problems in both situations. Mm-hmm. But what you're talking about is personality psychology. DISC is used a lot in the workplace. And what we used when we were originally building Sorter was what's known as the five factor model, or OCEAN, which goes a little bit deeper than DISC. And OCEAN is the mainstream model that most psychologists use. Mm-hmm. It's an acronym. It stands for openness, which is like your openness to try new things, to new experiences. Conscientiousness, which is like your task orientation, how dutiful you are. Extroversion or introversion, agreeableness, how they go with the flow, and then neuroticism, which is how harshly you react to different types of stress. And you're on a spectrum on each of those five factors, and that comprises your personality. DISC looks at some of those, but not all five. So the five factor model is considered to be a more complete model. So one of the things that we did with Sorter, some of our IP, was we looked at both of those frameworks. First, the personality science, and then also that decision-making science, the Herman Brain Dominance Instrument. And we looked at how can we correlate different personality traits into a prediction of how you make your decision. So are there different combinations of personality traits that are going to indicate that you are a big picture thinker or that you are really data-driven? And there are. Now, a lot of that stuff's not currently like at the forefront of Lavender, but it is stuff that we are bringing in to the next release, where we'll tell you, based on the person you're emailing, that we predict they're going to need a testimonial in this email because they're very people driven, or they're going to need a white paper because they're very data driven. But if you send the white paper to someone who's very action oriented, it's going to be too much information. It's going to do what's known as cognitively overload them. So that's the next part of communication psychology theory that we bring in, and it's cognitive load theory. And this is actually a very, very, very big part of Lavender, and I think why Lavender has become so effective in people actually getting more emails across every industry. You could think of cognitive load as like the brain's version of computer memory. It's basically how much information you are able to interpret, understand, and retain in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
So when you look at more dense readings or more complicated language, or if you're that action-oriented person who sent this very dense white paper, your brain's going to get a little tired. You're going to run out of cognitively overloaded, And in Lavender, a lot of what we focus on is how to reduce the cognitive load on the reader, because they're getting a lot of emails. If you're a decision maker, especially in our use case in sales, if you're an executive, you're getting inbound emails from however many sales reps, you're getting emails from your team, from your boss, from your investors, whoever, all the stakeholders in your company, plus you're dealing with, you know, your personal life, you got your wife or your kids texting you and calling you about all these distractions, and you've got meetings going on. And then you get an email from a sales rep that is 500 words long, takes 45 seconds to read, or whatever it is. And it looks like a lot of information. It's cognitively overloading in that environment. Not to say that this executive is unintelligent, so they've got a lot of things going on. So cognitive load theory is at the forefront of Lavender, and really thinking about how do we simplify messaging for the user that is more empathetic to how the recipient of that email is actually experiencing their inbox in their day-to-day. So a few answers to your question, but it all kind of ties together.
No, it does tie together. And it's very interesting because it's not different from other techniques that we use digitally to get people to take an action, right? So we work with our clients a lot on, let's say, issues around conversion rate optimization, right? How do we get more people to convert on a landing page, right? And that's something that we do for a lot of people. And one of the things that we've discovered is that there is cognitive friction, right? And we're, you know, first of all, we're animals, right? And because we're animals, we are wired to be distracted by movement, right? So for example, if a site has moving sliders that are distracting, we know that that reduces conversion by a certain percent because we cannot focus, right? But also we know that we don't know the state of mind of somebody coming into that landing page that day, right? So if we assume that we have this amount of patients, I'm looking for my camera, this amount of patients during a day, anybody has this amount of patients, but I don't know if the person coming to my landing page had an issue with their partner. Now they have this. I don't know if they had a bad day in the office. Now they have this amount of patients. I don't know if the dog is barking, right? So all of these things, what we try to do when we talk about improving conversion is minimizing friction, right? And making sure that we're making it super simple for somebody to actually take the action that we want them to take. Seems to me that what you're talking about is very in line, but in a different environment, which is the written environment, right? Somebody's getting, I get 100 emails a day. Why should I open yours? And why should I read it? Let alone open it, right? You might have 85% open rates of an email. That doesn't mean people are going to write it or take an action on it, right? So can you tell me a little bit more about that? And can we talk about what does that mean for an SDR, right?
I'm kind of laughing internally because what you are describing of understanding the emotional state of a visitor to a website and then trying to optimize around that, that's really what we were thinking about when we were building our last startup for marketers, Sorter. We were trying to first understand, our go-to-market was in email, but we were building toward doing this for landing pages. And first understand, can we bucket this person into how they make their decisions? And then we were trying to figure out how do we get to a point where maybe based on their behavior, we can figure out what's their likely emotional state at this moment. And we wanted to optimize around that. We were building toward that. COVID derailed us, and now we're going down a whole different pathway, a reapplication of the technology to be for sales emails. But I'm smiling because what you were talking about is like that's the problem we were trying to solve. And we
That's interesting. And we did not set up for this. Haven't had this conversation. So that's fantastic.
What Will and I always chuckle about is that when we were building that, people thought I think we're a little ahead of our time when we were trying to build that. And now that we're building Lavender, people are like, hey, can you give me Lavender for my marketing? And they want the product we were building a few years ago. When back then everyone's like, no, we don't want that. We've got some other way of doing it, but.
True. But you know, in a way, what has happened in the last 2 years, obviously because of the pandemic, has accelerated this need.
Absolutely.
Because more and more companies have realized that the way they are reaching out to their customers and to their end consumers is through digital platforms, either through a landing page, through an email, through a, you know, whatever that is, right? So even people that were on the fence, I see it in our business too, people that were on the fence 2 years ago, they jumped to our side very quickly because they were forced to. And so the whole COVID situation has accelerated the adoption and the need for tools like the ones that you guys build, right? Which is wonderful.
I mean, for us, I think we had really, really great timing. We happened to be in a really great position when COVID first took hold because we had built similar technology. The change of applying Lavender from marketing to sales emails was very minimal. The difference between a newsletter and a sales email, in a lot of ways, it boils down to things like the length of the email and a few other things as well. But it wasn't a huge undertaking to pivot our technology. Granted, we had spent 2 years and then building that, and then time before that, understanding the science. So it was like a lot of process went to get us that point. But we were uniquely positioned to actually optimize this when the pandemic hit.
Absolutely.
And credits to my co-founder, who really early in that started just getting really active on LinkedIn and started building a brand around cold email before LinkedIn really started getting, I mean, it was already big, but it got way more active as a result of the pandemic. Oh,
yeah. And I think and social selling too, people reaching out to prospects through LinkedIn, right? So very relevant to have a tool that can help people figure out the right way to get the reader to react to your email. Now, I want to come back to this, but I want you to tell me a little bit more about the pains in the SDR world, right? If you're an SDR today, what's going on? What are your biggest fears that you need resolved?
I'm going to explain Lavender in a sentence or two first to kind of set what that is and then lead that into the SDR pain. Mm-hmm. So I think we talked a little bit about Lavender in our previous startup. I haven't really defined what Lavender is. So Lavender is an email assistant that sits within the inbox, whether Gmail or Outlook, or in sales email tools like Outreach or SalesLoft. And it guides a writer, primarily an SDR, but also AEs, customer success. But SDRs are the primary user today, and it guides them through each part of that email. It isolates things in their email that could lower their reply rate, and it gives them a score. They want to aim to hit an A email. If there's something in the email that could lower their score or chance of reply, we'll suggest a new sentence to help them make that more impactful.
Okay.
We'll show them data.
And for people listening, SDR, I think it's obvious for you and I, but SDR is a sales development rep, right? Somebody who's trying to start a conversation with a potential client. Yeah.
So an SDR is someone who's normally on the phones or email trying to book a meeting with a potential company or prospect. And then an account executive or AE in a lot of organizations will then be the one that takes that meeting, shows the software, and tries to close the deal. So the SDRs are the openers. They tend to send a lot of cold emails, which is where the Lavender use case comes in. But it's also a great use case for account executives who have to nurture a lead over a long period of time. So Lavender can help in both of those situations. We help them with the email. We show them data on the people that they're emailing. They can personalize a lot easier. Then all sorts of coaching and analytics for the team and the manager. And those all really hit on the pains of the SDR. The SDR and the sales rep in general, but those are even more dominant because of the pandemic. When a lot of different market trends and how people communicate and the software available to SDRs over the past several years have changed. So when I first got into sales, I was given an iPhone 3 and an Excel file of people to call. And I had G Suite. And every email I wrote was manually written. There was no tools to send a bunch of emails at once that we had. Even when I went to my first tech sales job at a venture-backed startup, we weren't using any tools that would send mass cadences. And now what's very typical in sales, they have a tool like Outreach or SalesLoft or HubSpot, and they can tee up a high volume of automated sequences of emails. So when I was getting started in sales, the ability to optimize for volume was a competitive advantage. If I could send more emails or make more phone calls than the person next to me, I had a better shot at hitting my numbers or outperforming them. But now SDRs have tools that send automated emails for them. They have auto dialers that just dial hundreds of numbers for them until someone connects. And volume's no longer this competitive advantage. So the SDRs have to optimize more for quality and personalization, but they're still being judged around their volume. So managers judge SDRs based on output volume, but what's really working is being more personalized and more precise in your outbound. So alongside of this, a lot of the incoming SDRs were brought in a remote first environment. They were brought in maybe during the pandemic. They didn't have the same types of in office training or being able to turn to their peer to beside them to ask them for help. So Lavender also kind of sits like a peer in your office looking at your email and giving feedback. Alongside that, the shift of how people are communicating due to COVID has become really, really apparent. Prior to COVID, teams were spending around 20% of their day sending email and 80% on the phone. When the pandemic first took hold and no one was in the office, unless you had their cell phone number, people weren't going to answer their phone. If you had their cell phone number, they may or may not answer the phone. So we started seeing a shift where there are more outbound emails going out. And that also includes things like in-mail and social selling. People became more aware of that and started doing more of that, especially on LinkedIn. there's a company called Clary, and if I can remember the stats correctly, in the initial months prior to lockdown first happening, there was an immediate pop in the amount of sales emails by about 16% more emails. And then but the rate of the reply rate dropped by 8%. So you have this problem where more emails are being sent, but because of that, decision makers are being inundated with messaging and their reply rates have gone down. So the SDRs are really facing this whole new world where phone sales is still really, really important. It's really a big part of the strategy, but email and social selling and written selling is a bigger part of their process probably than ever before. Yeah. And Lavender doesn't help with phone at all, but any sort of written, it does.
Yeah, also because we know that there's less landlines around, right?
Yeah.
There's mobiles, and with mobiles, people are not answering directly. So we know from clients that we work with that they do cold calling quite a bit, but the performance rates of cold calling are continuously dropping, right? And they're more and more having to rely on some element of social selling, email outbound campaigns, etc. And they use tools like you talk about, CRMs, you know, from HubSpot to Salesforce, or if they're a smaller company, Woodpecker, it doesn't matter, right? But just try to get some scale. And, you know, some of the trends that are very obvious are about personalization, right? It's important to personalize those emails, right? And it's important to use a name and try to make them more personal to increase open rates. But then once you increase the open rates, how do you get people to be able, you know, to actually read the email and to take an action, right? And the question here is, can companies, the question here, and I'm sure you have an answer for this, right? But in my mind, the question here is, how much can you personalize at scale, right? And I know there's, the, you know, there is a rule that probably you've heard about it, the 10-80-10 rule, where in order to personalize at scale, you basically personalize the 10% at the front of the email, the 10% at the bottom of the email, and you keep 80% of the email more or less as a template in order to be able to provide some personalization, but allow for scalability, right? Which is one of the main challenges when we're talking about outbound email campaigns. What we know is that personalization is important, and we know that some level of personalization in drips is important, right? And the question is, how many drips do you personalize as well, right? Is it three? Is it four? At what point do we drop people back into a general email cadence, right? So all of those questions I find fascinating, and I wonder if through your experience with the working with the Lavender and your clients, if you have some insights you could share. And I know this was a very loaded, this was like a very low, it wasn't a question, it was me rambling, so sorry about that. But I guess the question is, you know, how much personalization is enough?
It's a hot topic.
Where's the limit?
Right now, this is a big debate for those not in the sales community. It's a big debate right now on LinkedIn. This idea of high volume, low personalization versus low volume, high personalization, or somewhere in between. And this idea of personalization at scale is what everyone's trying to achieve.
Because it's a holy grail, right?
Yeah. And see, I have little sympathy because when I was in SDR, I didn't have any sort of cadencing tools. I had to do 100 dials plus 50 emails or so a day. And these were personalized. And of course, along the way, you start to figure out certain types of language that will work. And you have a template or a few lines that I was using G Suites. They were canned responses I'd drop in, or snippets. So you have some language you repeat, but still I had to go through and like personalize different emails and do quick research and get really good at finding in a minute or two, what are the key points that I can use to personalize this phone call or email? And I think it's becoming a lost art where in today's world, personalization at scale is bracket first name, bracket company, bracket industry. They use these variables to try to take a template and mold it to a bunch of people. Now, the other side of the equation is people think of personalization and the old way of thinking was I personalize, I see you went to a certain school, or we're from the same town, or like the same sports team, and I would use that in my email. And while those things might have some familiarity with me, that doesn't mean that's going to solve my business problem. So now what people are really pushing is this idea of relevance as the way of personalizing. So understanding that person or their company and what's going on in that company. So for example, we saw that you are, maybe I'm selling something for like a GDPR service, and hey, I saw you've just opened an office in the UK. GDPR is probably even more important to you now than it was before. This is a great time for our product. Are you interested in hearing more? So building relevance about a certain need for the company as a way of personalizing is where a lot of things are happening right now. And that unlocks a couple of different things for the seller. They can start to personalize around persona, and that becomes more scalable if certain types of companies are all going through the same time period. Maybe you have built a list of people of all the companies expanding overseas, or all the ones that have just raised their Series B, or whatever the different variables are, and try to build something around that type of company. That's a little more scalable. But the way that we're thinking about it in our next release of Lavender is not automating all of the personalization, but trying to reduce the time that a sales rep spends to do actual personalization and do this research. We saw some recent polls that on LinkedIn that a sales rep would spend up to 15 or more minutes personalizing and researching for an email. And a lot of that workflow is them going to different tabs, LinkedIn Sales Navigator, Google News, Twitter, Crunchbase, reading SEC filings if they're more enterprise companies. So there's a lot of different steps in doing this research to find a couple of lines of personalization or relevance. So the next Lavender release, we're going to start pulling that information in to the workflow of our user. We'll show them recent news events, recent hiring events, recent funding announcements, and things like that. That way they get access to this information without having to leave wherever they're writing emails. So it's a more efficient way of personalizing and doing research without going so far on the efficiency vector of it being these variables where you just personalize by first name or company name, and people consider that personalization, but it's not really relevant to the buyer.
Fascinating. I've been fascinating, and I think the fact that you're trying to integrate all of these support elements that help solve the pain of your customer, which is the SDR, I think that's a very smart approach. It reminds me a little bit about what you see when you go into Sales Navigator, and you get like the company news and the hiring trends and the org charts, just helping integrate in one platform all of those needs. Tell me about the new consumer behaviors. I know when we did our prep talk, you talked about multitasking versus getting distracted, right? If you are on a text, we talked about some of these tools that are about video communication, right? And you were telling me about what's the ups and downs between using video communication tools like Loom and Vidyard versus old-fashioned SMS or email or messaging, and you talked about multitasking and not being able to multitask. And tell me a little about that and any other new behaviors that you're seeing in the marketplace.
Yeah, and there are some observations. Other parts of this are just my hypothesis on how things are going to progress. But to set the stage for that answer, here is something that we have observed. Before we really got into Lavender, this is more like pre-COVID time, best practices for a sales email, people were saying, 150 words was okay. That can take about 45 seconds to read for the average words per minute for the average reader. What we're seeing now in the data is under 100 words, ideally under 50 words of a sales email for a first touch email. So under 30 seconds or under 15 seconds. So the attention span just for the specific use case of a sales email has decreased a lot just in the past 2 years, as more and more communication is distracting in the inbox. And I think that can be extrapolated for how people consume information in general. So thinking of the inbox, it's a more noisy place than it was pre-COVID because people are getting more emails and thus their attention span there has decreased on average to about 11 seconds spent per sales email. Now, if you think about them in general, they're getting text messages, they've got multiple social channels, and the common thread amongst all these social channels is that we're optimizing for brevity and conciseness. So you think about tweets, TikToks, things like that. It's really quick videos, short timelines. And I think we're starting to see this in all sorts of communication. People are communicating amongst their friends and then their social channels in a more concise way. And we're now seeing that shift happen in business, where the things that are more effective in B2B are mimic what is more effective in social communication. So now B2B is moving things like TikTok. There's more memes that are being done on LinkedIn. We're seeing in our data that teams that use GIFs in their email strategy in B2B have higher reply rates than teams that don't, using GIFs memes in sales emails. Now, you can't overdo that. It's got to be done somewhat sparingly, but yes, because people are used to communicating this way amongst their friends, and it kind of it makes it a more familiar environment than the traditional formal stuffy B2B. Mm-hmm. I think there's also a lot to be said for multitasking. So a big trend right now with a lot of SDRs is they are sending videos and they're sending audio messages to prospects. Mm-hmm. I don't like those personally. I know some people do. They think it makes it feel more human. But me, even at a small company like ours, we've got a lot of notifications going. I've got messages from my team, from customers. I'm doing demos all day long. We've got a lot of different things happening. So if someone sends me a video or an audio message, I have to stop all of those things and solely focus on that message. If I do that, that's great for the seller because it means I have their attention. But the likeliness that I'm actually going to do that is so much more reduced than just sending a short text message in a LinkedIn DM or an email that I can read amongst doing other things. So I think
Let me ask you a question about that, because I think there's a space for both, right? I think a lot of what you try to achieve with tools like Lavender is at the very top of the funnel, right? Getting somebody to get into the funnel, getting somebody to respond and start the conversation, and therefore you want to be making sure that you're reducing friction and you're increasing the opportunity to get to get their attention. I think video tools, they play a very important role at a different step in the funnel, which is we're already having a conversation, probably we're already engaged, and now I want to explain a proposal, or I want to explain what I think it's wrong with your setup or with your business, right? And it's a more complex, messaging, and if I put it on an email, probably it's going to be a 300, 400 email. Words email, right? So now I put it on a 2-minute video. I'm being able to humanize the conversation, maybe share my screen, maybe explain what I mean, and I've simplified that piece of communication. But it's at a different stage, where I think this has value. I totally agree. I actually have used those tools for prospecting without much success because people think they don't know the link. They don't know if it's going to, people are afraid of viruses and things like that, right? There's no trust already established with the sender. So I would you agree that solves a different problem at a different stage?
I think what we've seen happen. So yes, I agree for the most part with what you said, that these tools can be really effective more down funnel. And they could potentially be effective higher up the funnel as well. But like with a lot of things, a few bad apples have spoiled the whole bunch. There are a lot of services that have popped up where they claim to do personalized video at scale. And you sort of record one video and in the video, I'm holding like a piece of paper or something. And then their software will just add your prospect's name in like fake handwriting in this video and call it a personalized video. So a lot of sellers are sending things like that. And you get a couple of those and you just kind of anticipate the next video you get is going to be trash, just like those. Mm-hmm. I think as with most types of longer communication, the further down funnel it happens, in the more of a relationship you've now built with whoever it is you're communicating with, a prospect, mm-hmm. for example, the more likely they are to actually engage with that. If you send a 2-minute video in your very first email to them, it's a low chance it's going to be engaged with for mm-hmm. a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And my co-founder has a great suggestion, I think, because going back to what you said earlier about not knowing what type of mental state someone's in that day, are they stressed? Are they busy? Maybe today their calendar is way busier than others. Maybe on other days I'd really like the video, but today I'm really, really busy and I can't read it or can't watch it. My co-founder suggests if you are going to include a video, include a little text snippet below it that kind of summarizes what it's about. So at least gives them some context, because mm-hmm. you don't know if the person you're communicating with, how they like, what they like. They might mm-hmm. prefer text. They might prefer video. So kind of giving them like a choose their own adventure in a way can prevent yeah. them just ignoring it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that follows all sorts of psychology theories, right? You know, are you more of a reader, or are you more of a tactile learner, or you know, so you can read it or you can watch the video. It's gonna be served however you want. So I interrupted you when you were gonna talk about multitasking with text. You can. Do you want to follow up? Pick up from there.
Yeah. So I think again, a lot of macro events, I think, are accelerating this behavior, partially because now you're working from home. So you've got mm-hmm. a lot of different distractions that are occurring. There's more need to multitask. That was already happening as a result of people being on social media, et cetera. But now, and especially thinking about the person in our market, a seller selling to an executive, an mm-hmm. SDR is not getting a lot of inbound email. They're the one doing all the outreach. The mm-hmm. decision maker they want to get in touch with is the opposite. Everyone's trying to get their time and get on their calendar. They mm-hmm. don't have a lot of time. Maybe they are in meetings all day and they've got a quick break, or they're checking their email while they're in a meeting with their team and they're multitasking the situation. So you have to make that communication as simple as possible in whatever environment they're in. You can't mm-hmm. just assume that they're going to sit there and give your email or your video or your audio message their undivided attention. They likely have a lot of other things happening. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. I think something else that we're going to see, this is something that I don't have data on, but is my hypothesis, is that as millennials and Gen Z begin to move into buying roles, the importance of written communication and optimizing for really short form messaging and social selling are going to become more important.
Yeah.
I don't think the phone is dead, but I also think right now, a lot of people who are still in buyer roles, and they will be for a long time, did not grow up with social media. But as mm-hmm. that starts to adjust, people are going to respond more comfortably to the types of communication that they grew up with. And that's going to be more written, more text, more email, more social. So I do think we're going to keep seeing a shift toward this. I don't think phone's going to go away. People seem to think that I hate the phone because of our company, but I've only done phone sales. That was mostly what I did. I have full credit and faith in the phone. I just think there is shifts happening in how people communicate, and optimizing for written, optimizing for social selling, optimizing for having a brand on social media and being a thought leader, even if you are, you're an SDR, just putting your opinion out there. So you have face recognition. I just think that's how things are going to be moving. And all those things are happening at once, which comes back to being able to anticipate that your prospect is going to be multitasking when they receive your message.
Yeah. And, you know, supporting what you're saying, and I totally, totally agree with what you're saying. I have three teenagers. You know, one is in his first year in college, so he's not really a teenager. He's an adult now, but they don't talk over the phone. You know, they with their friends they text, and mm-hmm. sometimes it's easier just to make a call and say, hey, are you coming or you're not, but they still text, right? Which is totally different to how my generation used to communicate.
Sure.
We use text, but our main way of communication is the phone. It's the opposite for younger people. So I totally agree, without having consumer research data, just from my mm-hmm. very small experiment at home, I can see how that's going. Now, the other thing, we do a lot of social selling for our own business, and we help businesses do social selling. And some of what you say is very relevant and so true. We found that there's lots of research out there. We found that any B2B buyer, 69% of B2B buyers have made some sort of decision before you're reaching out to them, right? They know about you before they accept to talk to you, right? So the issue there, and why it's important to connect it to what you were saying, is the fact that if you're not active in social media, if you don't have a brand, and you're trying to reach out to a buyer or to a decision maker without having that in place, you have a reduced likelihood of getting a result, because people will search for you. People will be looking to make business with people that they seem to know and trust. And that's why video is also so important, especially in social media, because video allows for the ability to mimic a human interaction, right? So if I post a video of myself talking about an interesting topic, like talking with you, and I post that on video on LinkedIn, and people are seeing that video on LinkedIn, it's a demo of how it would be to interact with me, sure. Right? So the minute I reach out to them, if they don't know me, they will, you know, there will be some familiarity. Absolutely. With my thought, with my thinking, with, you know, with what we do, etc. And that lowers the friction of wanting to do business. So having, to your point, a strategy to build your brand, especially if you're in a position of selling, a strategy to build your brand, and then having a very smart approach on how you are reaching out to people through text, I think that's a very, very important combination for anybody who's trying to make a living out of business development.
We could have an entire new podcast, I think, on that topic. Ironic, Lavender, we don't do a lot of cold email for our own company. We're just too small. We're too small to have the manpower to do that. Yeah. Our whole brand's been built through thought LinkedIn. Leadership, content marketing, and LinkedIn. Yeah. And it's crazy.
I'm a big fan of your content on LinkedIn. I think I've mentioned this a couple of times. I'm a big fan.
I saw a post from a sales leader, and I forget who it was, and I don't know the makeup of their business, if they're enterprise or SMB or mid-market, et cetera. But I remember he posted saying, as a comment saying, like, if one of his reps booked like 60 meetings in a quarter, or his team booked 60 meetings in a quarter, it'd be a really, really strong quarter. We've booked more than that in the past 4 weeks off of no outbound, just people found our content on LinkedIn. And I think all the things that you're saying are so true now. I demoed for a company yesterday, and the SDR manager said he's been following our content for over a year. He's been wanted our product for over a year, but he wasn't in control of budget. And he's at a new job now, and the first tool he's bringing on is Lavender. And it's just they don't know who we are. They've never used the product. They've just seen the content over the course of a year. And this consistency and repetition has built the brand within people's minds. Yeah. And we're always leading with value. We give away more content than the traditional sales influencers charging people $100 for in courses. We give everything away for free. We are on webinars and all these trainings and stuff, and we just lead with giving out content. And then that eventually leads back to people knowing about our product and ultimately wanting to use our product and buying our product. So I think how people learn about companies is changing. I think companies that are active in this way, there's a long tail ROI to it. I was talking with a friend of mine a couple of days ago who's interviewing for a CMO job, and he's kind of unsure because the founder of the company doesn't think investing in social marketing is worth it because it's not an immediate tick in revenue. But if you're not doing that, either as a company or even as an individual seller, like SDRs building their own brands, the prospects recognize them or they get opportunities. Like what's working at the company level also works at the individual level.
Oh yeah.
I think there's be more and more of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, I know that we're about to reach an hour, and I want to be very respectful with your time. I'd like to finish off our conversation just touching upon, I know, something that is important to you, which is not necessarily artificial intelligence, like the banner says, but how to use machines to make people more human, right? And I know that's part of at the heart of your USP, right? So let's talk about that a little bit.
One of the things that we thought about in the very beginning of building a company, even before it was specifically Lavender, was because we had this whole idea of how do we lead with communication psychology or the principles of that and lead with empathy for the recipient. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people are so wound up in trying to sell their product and hit their numbers, they don't communicate like a human. And we're a nudge in a way to help them do that. And we use AI in our product for that. And one of the examples I think of, for those who aren't getting a lot of sales emails, it's not uncommon for a sales email you receive to be super long, all about that person. They'll say, here's like basically everything my company does, and here's mm-hmm. a link to my white paper. Do you want to meet for 15 minutes on Friday? Now imagine you're in real life and you go to a conference, you go to a cafe, and you're like, hey, I'm Will. Here's everything I've ever done, every product of my, every feature of my, let me rephrase that. Imagine you go to a cafe and I'm like, hey, I'm Will. Here is every feature of my product. Here's my resume. And I've printed out my white paper for you. And here it is. Do you want to have coffee next week? The person's going to look at you like you're crazy. No one does that in real
life. You're a creep. You would be a creep. Yeah.
Absolutely. But in sales, that is what SDRs are doing. It's what their managers give them as templates. And it's not how humans communicate, but it's how people communicate in business. They don't have empathy for how the other person is going to interpret that message or how they're managing their inbox. So outside of the psychology and all of those things, just Lavender's a step back, and we kind of force the user to think about how is this going to be interpreted by the reader? And is this going to like blend well with how they are actually using their inbox? And whether the user knows that that's what's happening or not, that is what's happening. That's why people that use Lavender are getting 400% increases in their reply rates. It's largely because of that. And outside of that, like the way that we're able to apply the mass amount of data that we're analyzing, we can start to figure out, are there different trends for this user or their company for their market? So maybe people in certain markets respond a lot better to different types of language or different types of emails. And we're starting to learn that as well. So we'll be able to pair, for example, maybe someone who's working in a very scientific industry is going to prefer, for whatever reason, more data or more dense information, where someone who's in ads might not in marketing. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to figure that out in our data, and we'll be able to pair the right message with the industry or the person that they're communicating with. So there's a really good like human match there about how this person wants to receive their content and what they want that to say. So we're using it in a few different ways, but I think that's really it. Like being able to use the data science to help people communicate more like they would in a mm-hmm. more natural environment, but also do mm-hmm. that in an efficient way.
So I want you now to plug in a couple of stats of why, of how Lavender is helping SDRs. And I don't know if you're open to talk about what the cost for somebody to use Lavender. I mean, this is a time where if somebody's interested, you know, they should go to trylavender.com. But why don't you talk about some of the benefits of the tool? And this is not a podcast, a sales podcast, but I just think it's very, you know, it's very appropriate just to talk about that.
The great thing about Lavender is that it doesn't only apply to sales emails. It applies to any sort of email that you want the other person to have some sort of positive reaction to. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that people don't realize are sales emails are a sales email. It could be writing a marketing message. It could be a customer service email trying to keep them from leaving your company or to upgrade. It could be an email to a professor asking for an extension on a mm-hmm. paper that you're behind on. These are things we're trying to get the other person to take positive action to your benefit. And mm-hmm. Lavender helps in all those situations. It just helps people communicate better. we have people using it, not even for sales. They are English as a second language. They use Lavender to write more like a native speaker. There's lots of applications that they can use Lavender for. For our user, for the SDR, it solves a lot of their pain points by helping them be able to communicate more effectively and more efficiently. So all the things that we build tie back into helping you write a better email and helping you do that faster. Mm-hmm. We tend to see that users will, at the minimum, increase their reply rates by about 30% while reducing the time they're spending writing their outbound messaging by about the same, sometimes a little bit more. One of the great examples we have is a user, she was spending 30 minutes on every email she would send prior to Lavender, and she's now reduced that down to about 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And we have standout companies like Sendoso who have increased their reply rates by 400% and more than doubled their meeting booked. And doing that, they've also reduced the amount of time that they are spending onboarding new salespeople because they spend less time coaching them on emails. Lavender does it for them. There's a wealth of examples like that where people are getting massive increases into their reply rates. They're reducing their time spent writing. And no matter what background they've come from, no matter how what country they're from, what their education background is, what their job background is, wherever they're from, they have confidence. They can communicate with anybody using our product. And we hear that a lot. People come from different types of backgrounds and they're like, I feel a little uneasy communicating in certain situations. Or maybe it's just an age thing. It's in your first job and you're communicating with a CEO of some big company. And that's not something you're used to doing. And Lavender helps you in all situations. You have confidence in hitting send. And the managers, of course, have confidence that their team is going to send a great email.
Of course. So if people want to try it, go to trylavender.com. There's a 7-day free trial option that you can try. And then they have different pricing structures there. So I really recommend it. I'm a big fan. Not because Will is my guest. I was a fan before I decided to invite Will. Thank you so much, Will.
I'd like to add one more thing. Sorry. Yeah. So yes, you can get signed up for free at trylavender.com. But if you are a student, if you're unemployed, if you're trying to find a job, email us. We give it to people that are trying to find a job for free until they have full-time employment. So okay. I think it's a great use case. So
that's wonderful.
If you or someone you know needs a job and you're looking for a job, Lavender is free for you.
Excellent. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Will. I really enjoyed our conversation. This was a lot of fun and very insightful. And I hope in the future, if you don't mind, maybe we can invite you again for another podcast.
There's a lot more to talk about. And thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.